I'd like to thank everyone for coming together on such short notice to participate in today's halacha seminar. Yisrael Kedoshim Haim are that on such short notice during a week and a time that we're all still recovering from Purim and all of our busy schedules, that over 50 people, 60 people have RSVP'd to come together for this maimed of being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. A special thank you to Reb Lezer Gwertzman Shlita, who was the visionary behind this idea, and Kedarkai, he likes to do everything of Hashtila Eifen, but Mefarsimin La'isei Mitzvah, we're joined here tonight by his father, Ebrish Zalhelfin, Azazen Asach Naches, from him and from the ganze Mishpacha. And the Blazers will ken in Zeuche sein, Eidrevois Pashonim, to be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim and all of his special Avodas HaKadosh. Also a special Yashikoyach to Reb David Grossman from the Beis Havad that's involved Keseda in being Mefar, in doing seminars and all types of activities of Avodas HaKadosh and awareness. So I'm Greisa Hatzlach. I also want to thank Reb Yanki Buchla, who was the driving force behind seeing this vision to Lamaisa and pushing forward, as well as to Reb Yossi Lowenthal, Reb Yitzi Folman, Reb Yitzi Kamenetsky, and Reb Meir Kessner for spreading the word and seeing to it that we should have such a nice Olam here tonight. I think it's appropriate that this halacha seminar is taking place this week. The pasuk tells us, "Vayehi b'yom hashmini, kara Moshe la'aron ubanav lezikne Yisrael." And Rashi points out why did the zikne Yisrael need to be present, and Rashi explains that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to show Klal Yisrael that Aaron wasn't me'elov doing the avoda, but it was with the haskama of the zikne Yisrael. And it was with Das Torah, and having the Zikne Yisrael there was testimony to that. And Rabbi Yosef Salant explains that the Kaporan Cheta Egel, was by that Klal Yisrael brought Karbonis, and explains that Karbonis, that Cheta Egel, everyone had the best intentions that it should be a conduit and a vehicle to be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim, but in the end, Because they didn't do it with Das Torah, and because they didn't look for counsel from Rabbonim, from the Rosh Ha'am, came out such a tremendous kitrug, and that was the tikkun of the karbonis, that by doing things kechol asher yerucha, to be able to be mesaken that inyan of not doing things al pi Das Torah, and al pi Das Akenim. As we all strive in our day-to-day business to achieve the highest standards of professionalism, perfection, compliance in our day-to-day business, so too it is evident that all of you have come to attend this seminar are looking to adapt those same principles in the ruchniyestika aspects of our business. We know that the Gemara says that Hamalva Beribis Nechosav Mismaititin. It is poshet that merubim mida toiva, that by coming tonight together to be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim and to learn and familiarize ourselves with the issues so that we can all as appropriately be me'orer our clients when issues exist, that they should go and look for the Dvar Hashem and look for what is the halachadik way of doing business. Is it mutal halacha? Is it not mutal halacha? We find ourselves in times where we all are looking for schusim, that we should be matzliach. Everyone in the real estate community has been affected, and we're looking for schusim, that we should have hatzlochas, al de'ebish te'helfen, that we should all have hatzlocha beruchnias, begashmias, and that we should be mekadosh Shem Shemayim in the workplace, v'yamali Hashem kol mishalis lebeinu l'tayva. This time it is my kovod and schus to introduce Rabbi Reisman Shlita, who came to be Mechazikos and to be Ma'iras, the author of the sefer on Hilchus Rivas, is world renowned for his hashkofa and halacha. Without further ado, it is my covet to introduce a Rav Raza to you.
I too thank you all for coming. From the very outset, I was very confused as to why anybody would need me to come to Lakewood. I don't know what I could add that you don't already have here in Lakewood, so I don't know why it was necessary for me to come. When I finish speaking, I hope you're not all saying the same thing. It's very difficult to cover all of Hilchus Ribbis in one sitting. And it's a big danger that in trying to discuss something, it'll suddenly fly off in all directions and nothing klar will come out. So what I'd like to do is first of all divide our discussion between the discussion of Hilchus Ribbis as it pertains to the Ilam and the rules of Ehet Iska, which obviously overlap, but we somehow have to be able to categorize what we're going to speak about. So I'd like to talk about the Ehet Iska second, and first talk about some of the Hilchus Ribbis issues. So you have questions pertaining to the Iska, we'll get to the Ehet Iska second. Regarding the basic nidoinim of Hilchus Ribbis that come up, I did receive an email with a list of issues to be addressed. And I'm going to start. I don't know which things are Devarim Pshutim to you, which things are not. Obviously, you're all in the ASIC. And I'd like to start with three Yesaidis that I suppose are known or should be known to you. And from there, we'll see where it leads us. The first Yesaid is the Yesaid, which by now everybody in the room should be aware of, that somebody who takes a mortgage under someone else's name is actually borrowing from that person. What I mean to say is that when a Yid has a relationship with a lending institution, the lending institution is lending it to the person whom they recognize as the borrower. So that if someone's son wants to buy a house and he's not creditworthy and he takes his father as the borrower, the bank is lending money to the father, not lending money to the son. So that if a father takes a mortgage on a home for the son, and he considers it the son's home, then he's actually borrowing money from the bank and lending it to his son. Now, people tell me, well, the house is the father's, it's in the father's name. So I ask the father if Lachamei of Esrim, he plans for all his children to split up the house or for that child to get the house. Typically, the plan is for the house to belong to that child. Stoma, in such a case, the house belongs to the child, and the father has borrowed from the bank and has lent the money really to his son. Now, people ask, it's a steer. I'm saying that Klapi, the bank, we go by the books, whoever's the borrower. And between the father and son, I'm not going by the title that's on paper. I'm going according to their agreement. And the answer is, that's right. When you're dealing with the bank, you're dealing with the issue of the person, the bank, who's the lender, considers to be the borrower, finished. And father and son, if both parties agree that even though on paper it's in one person's name, it's actually someone else's, then that is the way it is. And that's the Metzias HaDvarim. They could draw up a shtar and do things differently. But when they do it stama, that's what takes place. What I am most busy with in Brooklyn is fixing these things up, sometimes a number of years after it's happened. People find out it's a problem, and there are ways, if not too many years go by, there are ways of addressing it without too much of a hishtanus. So that's Aleph, and that I assume everybody here knows that the borrower of record is the borrower. If the house belongs to the son, then the father is lending money to the son, and the father and son need a het iska between them. It doesn't matter if the son pays to the bank directly. Am I correct that that's something that the Olam is comfortable with, is familiar with. I don't know if it's an issue or not. Shtika is, yes.
What if both are on the contract?
So we're going to deal with co-signers in a second, you're right. But in this case, where it's the father and the son, that should, yes. Okay, so I said I wanted to start with three yesaidis. The first is what I just said. The second has to do with co-signers, the first question, and the third has to do with partners, your question. So those are really the three things I wanted to address. Yes?
Why don't we say the father gave the son a present as opposed to, he bought it?
It's very nice that the father gave his son a present, but then the son is not obligated to pay the mortgage. The father will pay the mortgage. Well, that would be wonderful. The son would be happy to hear. If that's true, it's fine. If the father does not expect the son to pay the mortgage, then there's taka no issue.
The fact that he expects it, it's not written anywhere.
Well, I guess we have to decide what would happen if they went to Bezdin. If the father said, I meant for you to pay, and the son said, I thought it's a matana. If halacha would paskin that it's a matana, then it's a matana. I think normally when someone under those circumstances buys a house, the stoma de milsa is that the father is buying and he expects the son to pay the mortgage. That's usually the case. Usually he gives all the papers to the son. He says, I don't want to have headaches with it. You pay directly to the bank. Now, you're right. If it's meant as a matana, then it's fine. If he doesn't obligate the son, it's fine. But it's not the typical case. The typical case is where the expectation is that the son is going to pay the mortgage. Yes.
What does it mean to say that the father says that he intends to give the house to the son after 120? The father could change his mind every day for the next 50 years. So what does it mean? What is the legal effect of the father saying, yes, I intend to give the son?
All right. This, in Cheshem Ishbat, when something is not spoken out clearly, then Bezdin has to paskin according to the umdin or the milsa, according to the estimation of the intention of the person. The best thing is for things to be spoken out clearly, and I should tell you, you should advise your clients to have a document that says clearly to whom the property begins. I know of a case in Flatbush. Someone bought a property in his sister's name, a middle-aged man, my age. He was in his 40s when it happened. His sister probably also in the 40s. The sister suddenly took ill and passed away, and the children say it's their house, it's their property. It was an investment property, and the children say it's theirs. I don't know if they say it because they're crooks or they say it because they really think so. You're right, it should be documented. If it's not documented, halacha would have to paskin about by the normal way that people do things. Normally, a child can't get a mortgage, a father gets the mortgage. Normally, the intent is for the house to belong to the child. And if the father, 20 years later, would say, I want it to go to all the children, and the son would go to a din Torah, the son would win the din Torah. Because the stoma de milsa, the ordinary behavior of people is that way. And that's the reason that it's so. Okay, so I think that's the, as I said, the first nekuda. The nekuda, which of course creates many of the problems, it's easily addressed in the first place if people are aware of it, and it's even easily corrected in the first few years that a mortgage is paid. It can be corrected, it can be adjusted. It doesn't involve usually tremendous hefts and mamon. The second nekuda has to do with guarantors, the halacha of a guarantor. Now, when you start looking at all the halachas of guarantors, it can be complicated. To cut to the lemaisa, the guarantors that exist in the 21st century are what halacha calls an Arav Kablan. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because that's always the case. A guarantor today falls into a machlokes rishayim. Now, when I say a guarantor, let's not talk about a mortgage, just to keep things simple. Let's just talk about somebody taking a loan from a bank and someone guaranteeing it. It could be a mortgage, it could be something else. A guarantor who guarantees a loan from a non-Jew to a Jew, a bank in this case, or any non-Jewish entity or a non-Jewish individual who lends money to a Jew, of course, is allowed to lend berivis. The guarantor who guarantees the loan falls into a machlokes Rashi and the Rashba. And the machlokes is how to look at the guarantor. Rashi holds that the guarantor has the full dinim of a borrower and lender, borrower and lender relationship with his co-borrower. In other words, Reuven is borrowing from a guy. Shimon guarantees him. Rashi holds that Reuven and Shimon are in effect co-borrowers, and they're each guaranteeing each other. The lender could go to either party to collect. And in effect, they're each guaranteeing each other's loans so that the guarantor, who didn't even get the money, the other one got the money, is considered to be a co-borrower and has a lender-borrower relationship with his partner, which means that the two of them would need to have a hetta isk in order for the guarantor to be able to put himself in a place where he would be paying the interest. Now, the Rashba disagrees. The Rashba says a guarantor is nothing until he's called to fulfill his guarantee. And both shittas are brought in the Shulchan Aruch. Virtually all Paiskim Paskin like Rashi, that a guarantor needs to be a guarantor that we have today is a ribbis issue. There is a borrower-lender relationship between the borrower and the guarantor. And for that reason, there needs to be a hetesk between them. There is I would say, a das yachid, two yachidim, G'day le'aylam, the Maram Shik and the Avnei Nezer, who say that one is allowed to rely on the Rashba. This shita is batal b'meya to the Paiskim that are machmir, including the Chachmas Adam and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, all the later Paiskim who paskin l'chumra. Now, obviously, this leads to some confusion because there is a shita, after all, that's mekel. Lamaisa, all the Paiskim today hold, like the Iker Shita in the Shulchan Aruch, like Shitas Rashi, that a guarantor, as guarantors are set up today, and a borrower need to have a Hete Iska arrangement in order for it to work. And that is really a second yesod that one has to know in the mortgage business or in the lending business, bechlau, that being a guarantor is an issue. So that if the bank, the son is buying a house, and the bank only recognizes the father's credit. So a moment ago we spoke about the house and the mortgage being in the father's name. Now we're talking about it being in both names. But at the end of the day, the father is the guarantor. We also know he's really the guarantor upon whom the bank relies. And it's the same basic issue of the Arif Kavlin, meaning somebody who the bank could go to, has a right to go to first. Now, when I say first, in halacha, the fact that the bank sends a letter to the borrower before it goes to the guarantor doesn't mean anything. The question is to whom you have to go, who you would pursue in court first. If the bank has a right to pursue the guarantor in court without first pursuing the borrower of record, then halachically, like Rashi, the way, as I said, virtually all Paiskin Paskin, there is a ribbis issue between the two of them. And to my knowledge, that's the way it is today. The bank is not required to pursue the borrower. If they want, they can pursue the guarantor. They usually pursue whoever has assets that are more easily accessible to the bank. And if they have the right to pursue whoever they want, the guarantor is the same as a co-borrower, and there needs to be a hetesk in between them. So this is the second issue. It adds confusion because sometimes people hear shiurim and they hear about the Rashba Shita and Avni Nezer. It depends. Someone who stands up for mortgage brokers and gives a shiur is going to mention the Avni Nezer and say it's there, say that we don't pass it that way. Somebody who's learning Yeridaya with an Olam or learning Bava Metzia and just wants to give an interesting shiur, he may build up an Avni Nezer. But it ends up causing confusion. As a matter of halacha, the situation with the guarantor, the way banks have set up, to my knowledge, you know better than me, but the way guarantors are set up today, you have a right to go directly to the guarantor.
That's the
here is the issue.
It's actually asserted by the banks in most guarantees today. Just that
right that they guarantee. That they do?
That they have the right to go after either one.
They have a right to go after either one. So in that case, that is the second, as I said, the three yesaidis I wanted to share with you. That's the second yesaid. The yesaid is that a guarantor, for our purposes, the way guarantees are done today, is a problem. You may find in Chazal discussion of a guarantor that's mutter, a stam arif, that's talking, an arif stam is someone who you cannot pursue until you first pursue the borrower. It has nothing to do with the way the banks operate today. And therefore, that's the second issue in halacha l'maisa. So we have the bank lending to the father for the son. We have the guarantor. Now, the issue of co-borrowers. And the third idea is the issue of co-borrowers. And here, Baruch Hashem, I have a kula to tell you. I think I'm just for chumris, but let's start with the basics. Co-borrowers today are each responsible for the entire loan. As you know, banks, unless something unusual takes place, typically, no matter how many borrowers there are, there's a desire for the borrowers to each guarantee the entire loan and to guarantee it personally. When that is the case, we do have an issue. The issue is, if my partner and I start a business, we start a bakery, we call it Reisman's, and we're partners, and we want some capital to get started, we go to the bank. So the bank lends us $1 million. Now, I could say, look, the bank is lending me $500,000, lending him $500,000. If we would go separately, I would go to a bank, take a $500,000 loan, he would take $500,000 loan, we throw it into the business, which were 50-50 partners. So of course, I could take out money to pay my interest obligation. He could take out money and pay his interest obligation. There's no problem. As long as we're 50-50 partners and we're each putting in 50% of the money, so we're entitled to take equal amounts out to pay our interest bills, our electric bills, our grocery bills, whatever we want. We can each take out money to do so if we have separate loans. The issue is when we take a $1 million loan together, I'm guaranteeing his $500,000, he's guaranteeing my $500,000, and pashtus, we fall into the problem I just mentioned of guaranteeing someone else's loan creates a mavalev relationship between the guarantor and the borrower, and again, creates the need for hetiska, which, if drawn up properly, addresses it. But without a hetiska, again, it is a problem which the Olam is generally not aware of. What is the kula? The Taz has a kula. It's known as the Taz's kula. And the Taz says the following. It says, let's say I'm a partner with you in a business. We have a silent partner and a managing partner. So you invest, and I'm investing too, but I'm running the business and whatever our financial arrangements may be. The Taz, the way we understand the Taz, says that if I, as the managing partner, whatever I do, I'm doing as a business expense. I might go to a printer and print up a brochure. I might go to a painter and paint the office, which we have. I might go to the bank and take a loan and have to pay interest. The Taz holds that when a active partner takes a loan, he can take the loan for the business, and that's a business expense. He's authorized by the silent partner to do any normal type of a business expense that's needed. And that, the interest then becomes a business expense, provided that the interest is paid by, paid from business funds. Provided that it's paid from business funds. In other words, the interest is a business expense. And the Tazis Kula holds true as long as the money is paid from business funds. Ideally, it should be paid from profits which accrue after the loan is taken. That's really the ideal way to do it. From profits which accrue after the loan is taken. So the loan is an expense. It brought in certain profits, and the money is paid. So that we have, basically, as I said, I came, three yesaidas. The borrower of record yesaid, the guarantor yesaid, and now the partners. Partners are a problem because they're guaranteeing each other. But where there is an active partner, and the active partner takes a loan for the business, it couldn't be considered a business expense. It does not apply when the silent partner takes a loan to throw into the business on his own. But when the active partner takes the loan, that is the kula of the Taz. The Shulchan Aruch Rav says that you could use the Taz's kula even if both partners are active partners. It doesn't have to be that there's one. As long as it's not a silent partner, as long as there's someone authorized to create business expenses within reason, then this kula could apply. So that you do have, in the case of a business loan, in many cases you do have this kula. But you realize we're talking about taking a loan where interest will be paid from the profits of the business. That means you're taking a loan to run the business. Today, the style, I should say today, until the meltdown, the style was, you had a business, you mortgaged it to the sky, and you took the money as profit, and you hoped the business could carry it. Yeah, yeah, nish, nish, you already have the money. You know, if it's not going to be business profits that are going to be able to pay the interest, the Taz is not talking. The whole concept of the Taz is that it's something that, with which you're running the business, and if it's something with which you're running the business, then it's something you're allowed to do. So the Taz is a good Taz to know. I think the Paiskim generally accept the kula of the Taz. And these three yesaidis, rather than to confuse the Yoilim with a ton of information, these three yesaidis basically, I think, will be the issues that will come up in the typical situations that come up in someone who's either brokering a loan or involved in arranging a loan in any which way, which involves interest. These are, to my knowledge, the three yesaidis which we keep on repeating all the time. You know, I learned Hilchis Ribbis last in a regular Seder in Yeshiva in 1995. And I don't have a great memory, so I really don't remember too much. But there are a handful of things that we keep on repeating all the time, that come up all the time with Shilas. I tell my son, you just learn. I'll write you a list of 150 Shilas, and that's all the Rav has to know. And you just, you know, learn Noshim, Nezikin, or whatever you could. And it's pretty much the same issues which repeat themselves. Now, I don't say that's the same 150 Shilas are 75% of the Shilas. The Shilas that go to Rebbe Yashiv are all, should be all unique Shilas. But there are Shilas that are unique. But in Hilchas Ribbis, these are the three Yesaidis that cause confusion. The first Yesaid, which is not, it's not the person's instinct. That, see, we have an instinct that Ribbis is bad because it's wrong. It's not fair. It seems fair. My father helps me buy a house. He takes the loan. I pay straight to the bank. My father doesn't know anything about it. It seems fair. And maybe it is fair. There's no word for fair in Hebrew. Lashon Kodesh, you go to Israel, they say Zelo fair. Lashon Kodesh, no such thing as fair. It has nothing to do with fair. It has to do with what's right. What's right, Al Pi Torah. And we go according to the halacha. Basically, what I've told you is the halach yelach of it. Confusion comes, as I said, from the Rashba Shita, who's a makel in the case of the guarantor. and maybe there's some confusion over the Taz. But basically, this is the Aleph, Beis, and Gimel of what you have to know.
Does it make a difference to the Taz's Kula? Does the managing member personally guarantees that some of it's personally guaranteed?
For the Taz's Kula, the managing partner can guarantee it personally, but he doesn't want to pay all the interest himself. He wants to be reimbursed from the business. That's the problem. The business can only pay, ideally, from profits which accrue later. Whether the business can pay from its capital, the chalukei deis, from profits which accrue later, the Taz is certainly meikel. There's some who understand that he'd be meikel even with capital that existed that predated the loan. So the personal guarantee is okay, but the problem is when he wants to get money back from the other party, from the other partner, from the business, that's where the problem comes up. Yeah, but he doesn't want to pay for it himself. Look, if he wants to borrow money himself, pay interest, and give the money to the business, he's allowed to do that. And the problem only comes up because he wants the business to share in his interest obligation to his lender. So if he wants to personally pay it, he can do it. The shaila is only when he wants to be reimbursed from the business, and that's where the issue comes up. Yes?
So what happens if you have a deal where if they took the loan, the rent is covering the mortgage. After 2-3 years, the economy hits or whatever, and rents go down, they have to draw ahead to Iska at that time. So at that time, they're putting their money together. Obviously, it's 50-50, but the building is not covering itself. They're taking their own money.
Right. In such a case where you use the Taz's Heter, and at the time, there was enough profit to cover. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, there is a shita that you could use capital to cover, but let's say a person wants to do it l'chatchila and use the profits. The profits no longer cover the interest payments. At that point, you could do a heta iska, but you can't just change a loan to a heta iska. If somebody arranges a loan, he doesn't think he needs a heta iska, either he's right or he's wrong, and later he wants to convert it to a heta iska. You need to go to a Rav who knows what he's doing to make the transformation. I'm not going to stand here today and give you the pratim on how to change it because it'll be confusing. You can't just, Rav Moshe says, a het iska is not a kameya. You can't.
Basically, every time you take a loan, you should make a het iska on day one to make a problem.
Shalom Aleichem. That's Korev, that's Rav. Sorry. You know that investors are overly optimistic or always were. If you want, you can do a head test if you want. You could play it safe and start that way. But my point is, if you want to convert a loan to a head test, you can't just sign a head test form and the loan becomes a head test. You really have to settle the loan and then reissue it as under the terms of a heta iska.
Okay. The investment can't be employed to $1,000. Either buying a single family home as an investment, or has to be at a business.
The Taz's Kula only applies where there's going to be profit. So, whatever home you're buying, if the interest has to be covered by the profit that the business makes post-loan, l'chatchila, it has to be profit that comes afterwards. So if you're going to buy a three-family home and there are going to be two of the three families living there, you would have to do it in a way where they would pay the business rent for their apartment, and the business would have the money and would be able to pay it.
In any case, the business
that
was
And therefore,
no, I'm saying the rivers is telling you who the mouth is and who the labor is.
I'm relying on him, he's relying on me, then we're guaranteeing it.
It's true. The Taz's Shita is based on the idea that in any business, a partner goes into the hardware store and buys material for the showroom. He also has debt. The person in the hardware store is also trusting him. He might give him credit only because he knows him. But it's a business expense, and a business expense is mutter. A business expense. The Taz is based on the idea that the interest loan is also a business expense, and as long as it's paid from the business money, that's mutter. As long as it's paid from the business profit, then it's mutter. And that's what it's based on.
Okay. In the first Yisra, the Rizin said that it's understood that the father hopes that the son would repay him for the loan. Now, it's true that the father hopes so, but the father or father probably, if let's say the son would not be able to come up with it, probably would easily be mevater to his son or son-in-law and wouldn't give him a hard time. The problem is some chelik of the ribbis part. So would that also be self-understood that
you see, what you're asking is a chesh mishpat shayla. If somebody takes out a mortgage for his son's house, a person takes out a mortgage, it's for his son's house, my assumption is stama, that the house belongs to the son, and that the father expects the son to pay for it. Now, it's true, they could draw up a contract that says differently. Ramesha's arrangement with the sale lease agreement does just that. Ramesha has a system to avoid a hetiska in buying a house, a sale lease agreement, which for numerous reasons is a preferable arrangement where it can be used to a hetiska. It's far preferable, and if it could be used, it could be used. And for sure, if they're b'nei Torah, they know ahead of time there's a problem, they can make arrangements. The father can make whatever arrangement he wants. He can say, I don't expect the son to pay the interest. Whatever they want, they could do. I'm talking in a stoma case, in a case which you're dealing with, where the father is taking out the loan for the son's house. Stoma, if they didn't speak out differently and they went to Bezdin, Bezdin would assume the house is the son's, not to be divided by Yarshim. And the assumption is, in most of these cases, that the son is given all the papers, he's told to mail in the check every month, that it's the son's, that the son is obligated to pay it back. That's usually the case. You're right, if they arrange differently, they could arrange differently. The legal documents are not relevant in this case for two reasons. First of all, the government cares who the owner of record is. If the owner of record is not the person living there, then it's not owner occupied. Clappy the government, it matters who is the owner of record, and that's what counts. Just like when you have elderly parents and they put money in the children's home, in the children's name, and between the parent and child, it's understood that it's the parent's money. And with honest people, it doesn't become an issue. But the government will tell you it depends who the owner of record is. And even if you're going to tell the attorney general that I'm the owner of record, but I really consider it my mother's, whatever she wants, he doesn't care. He cares who the owner of record is, and it's the same thing there. There's a second nekuda. Ramesha writes that you're allowed to draw up documents which contradict the hetaiska, which contradict the arrangement, in order to expedite matters in case you have to go to court, so that you can have a hetaiska at the same time that you have a note. And it's not a problem as long as the hetaiska is primary. And as I said, I want to get to hetaiska second. But the legal document is the document that counts between the bank and the borrower. The arrangement is what counts between the father and son, or the frum yidden who are doing whatever they're doing. Their arrangement is what counts in halach.
A lease of a car or equipment financing and so on, does
In the case of a car, it's very confusing to me. I don't fully understand what is really taking place. In the case of a normal lease of equipment where the arrangement, people call it a lease, and the arrangement's actually a bank loan to buy it, that's what you're talking about. It would fall under the gather if there is in fact a bank loan or interest payments that are taking place. It's confusing to me. I once looked into it and found, I just found it very confusing. So, okay, it's known that Rav Moshe held that when there's no personal guarantee on a loan, that there is no issue of ribis. As long as there's no personal guarantee, even if you're guaranteeing other things, Rav Moshe held that way. Kedai Rav Moshe l'smichalav, even by Nisadai Raisa. Here, Mechas Yitzchak, who has a tshuva to argue with Rav Moshe, is masking that Rav Moshe's svar is enough to make it a drabanan. He just told us that it still should apply b'asam midrabanan. So if one wants to be sanachar Rav Moshe, you could. But it's easy to do a het disk and be yetzikol hashitas. So why not? I mean, say both of them have to sign personally. You're right. The Taz's Kula is for the active owner, the active partner, to go and take out a loan and consider the interest of business expense. If the silent partner is going to sign for it, I don't believe that the Taz's Kula would apply. And then it would go back to the regular case of two partners taking a loan. The ribbis is in the arrangement. If two partners, Reuven and Shimon, take out a mortgage, and they're both responsible for the whole thing, that means that one of them is guaranteeing the other person's loan. Now, lachar ma'ase, if it already happened, moving forward, they should make sure that each one pays only his half. The problem is in the original arrangement where the co-signer is guaranteeing the other person's half. That's the problem, the obligation that he takes upon himself.
As a co-borrower, husband and wife, different than the...
Co-borrower, husband and wife, it's interesting, many years ago, our Fivel Cohn was learning Hilchus Ribbis, and he had this issue with husband and wife. It becomes an issue with credit cards, with everything. Husband and wife already becomes a big problem. Now, Baruch Hashem, he went to Rabbi Yashiv. Rabbi Yashiv told him, husband and wife is one packet. The wives. But he told him the husband and wife is one packet, it's one thing. So Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Yashiv was matzalos from a tremendous problem. He didn't say that about father and son, but he said that. What? I can't speak for him. I just... Rabbi Yashiv said, husband and wife, it's one packet, and that's that.
If there were co-signers on a loan, and a heter iske was not drawn up, can you be samech on the shita seraj for mishkas atkak, like a b'diem? Or do you have to go read the
you could be simach on what already happened under Rajba, but you should be...
You have to redraw up the document.
You don't have to redraw it up. You don't have to do it at the bank. The Yidden could do it between themselves. But again, you have to go to someone. You can't just draw up a piece of paper. It's not a kameya. You wave it at the loan. It turns into hetter iske. It has to be reissued. The loan has to be... It sounds scary. You know, the loan has to be paid and relent. There are ways of paying it without having to come in with a suitcase full of cash. You know, the Rav who does it will be able to. You're not going to help Lemafreya. Hetiska cannot work Lemafreya. It also only works Mekana Laba. And whatever was. Whatever was, you said Mechan the Raj, but it's fine. it's usually not a problem with the other, because usually they taka paid 50-50. The guarantor wasn't called upon to pay the money. And therefore, it's not a problem with the other. It's a problem in the L'chad Chela. Okay. You have to speak up, I'm sorry. That's not a theory. If I understood correctly, the question was that if they have no personal guarantee, but if you break any clause in the agreement, they can go after you personally, right? So that's fine, because what it's saying is if you're honest, there's no personal guarantee. If you do something dishonest, so then I'm not familiar with the triggers. If it's bekayach the borrower to avoid those triggers, then it's okay. If the trigger has to do with the prime rate changing, which he has no kayak to change, then it's a problem. If it's something that he can control, see, if the personal guarantee would kick in on circumstances out of his control, then it's a personal guarantee. Then it is a personal guarantee. And then it would be an issue.
Credit card debt. Does that fall under you're shopping and you don't have cash on you, so you borrow someone's credit card.
Yeah, there's the supermarket uses the head desk. Let me tell you, a credit card is exactly the same thing. If the bank is lending me the money, if I give you the credit card, then I'm lending you the money. It's really the same problem. Really, the only way, the best thing with a credit card is to pay on time and avoid the whole interest issues. I don't know. I could get into the credit card. It becomes in the practical world, it becomes an issue which has to be addressed. Rabbanim address it. I'm not sure that we want to spend a lot of time on it, but it is a problem. The way out is the person has to pay within the 30-day grace period, and if he doesn't, it may be that he's a grum of Nizak and he would have to pay up. He didn't. If he's supposed to pay directly, and the agreement is he pays within the grace period, it may be that itself would be adequate. And if he doesn't pay, then he can he'll create a schayvus. But not if it's done that way intentionally. All right, I wanted to get to the Hetta Iska issue, which is the second half of the discussion today. And there were a number of questions regarding Hetta Iskas. Let me try as best as I could to... I'm assuming that you're basically familiar with the Hetta Iska. Just to touch on the handful of questions people always ask. Is the Hetta Iska l'chatchila? I don't know how many Batei Dinim there are today in Lakewood. I know that when Meisharim opened, I assume they still, the Meisharim doesn't do Hetta Iskas. They said there's already one Bezin that does Hetta Iskas. We don't do Hetta Iskas. They do the Ramesh sale lease agreement. And they do it very well because they use my Nusach from the Laws of Ribbis, which I'm very honored to be able to make it past the Napais V'Kivrei Sheba Lakewood. But is a Hetta Iska l'chatchila? It's really not right for someone to say that it's not l'chatchila to use a Hetta Iska. G'dayle Olam wrote Hetta Iskas. The Bris Yehuda brings names of three G'daylim that said it's not l'chatchila. They were all over 200 years ago. In the last 200 years, pretty much all the Gedalei Olam have written Hetta Iskas. It's hard to say it's not l'chatchila. Is it a hider not to use it? Yes. But to say Hetta Iskas is not l'chatchila is not correct. However, if a person has no Iska, then there's really no way to use a Hetta Iska. Someone comes, he wants to borrow money with a Hetta Iska. So you ask him, do you have any investments? You own a home? He has nothing. Using a Hetta Iska then is not only not l'chatchila, I don't know that it's b'di'evid, it's good either. Because what's a Hetta Iska? You're lending me money. No, you're not lending me. You're investing in my investments. If I have investments, you can invest in my investments. If I don't have investments, what is the Hetta Iska? It's nothing. So to use a Hetta Iska where someone has no assets, that's not proper. Of course, if the iska, the money is being lent for business itself, that itself is an iska, and that's fine. But where a person has no assets, it's not a chetchila, it's really not even b'di'evid, a person should not use a het iska where there's no where there's no asset at all. A savings account is an asset. Anything that could earn money is an asset. Today's savings account don't earn much. The person is b'kaychai to choose where to invest it. And a person can use money which he has in the bank, an IRA. A person can use it as an asset at home. A person can use it as an asset. The way Hetiska works, you don't spell out the assets, but you have to have assets. Again, someone who's giving a shir, not halacha l'maisa, an interesting shir, will mention there's an opinion, I think it's a Shailo Meshiv, that even if you have no assets, but because you're borrowing money, you can go to work, and so your work is like an iska. It's not, no place can bring it l'maisa, and it just makes people confused. So I'm not going to mention it. But it makes people confused. They say, I heard this heta, I heard that heta. If someone has no assets, using a hetisk is not proper. If someone has assets, you're allowed to use a hetisk. Kolshkein, if you're borrowing money for investment, then a hetisk is something that a person could do. Is it a hidda not to use it? Yeah. But to say it's al chetchila, I don't think is correct. The second...
Borrowing money for primary residence.
Well, we always, the Chochmas Sodom writes that a home is not good enough for a hetiska. In the time of the Chochmas Sodom, homes didn't go up in value. Until fairly recently, homes in America did go up in value. And it was understood that a home is an adequate investment for a niska. Our hope and prayer is that the homes will again go up. I think one can bet that over 10 or 20 years it'll go up. And even in the next year, we don't know what it'll be. So I think today the consensus among Paiskim is that a home could be considered adequate to be mati using Ateska. Although if you have a home, you can also do a sale lease agreement, or a Moshe's sale lease agreement, which again, because of time constraints, I'm not going to go into. Ramosha has an arrangement for a mortgage, which avoids the entire Hetiska issue by drawing a sale lease agreement. The sale lease agreement is fine. Rabbi Cheskel Roth has a tshuva in which he writes that Ramesh's arrangement is the best, better arrangement than Hetiska. And that's a good way to go. But as far as Hetiska on a home, you could use a Hetiska on a home. Yeah, yes?
What about modifications to the Hetiska? I had a situation where it was a non-firm lender. His attorney would only let him execute a hetariska if it's spelled out on the hetariska that it could not be construed as an arbitration agreement. Because in New York State, the courts have ruled that a hetariska can be arbitrable. And that's what he said. Otherwise, he would not make the loan. So a dayan told me, and I hope it was reliable, that if the lender wants to be a Russian, doesn't want to go to Besden, it's still a hetariska. It's still a hetariska. He has to take out from the iska of the borrower. If there's a dispute and he insists on going to Arkais and does not want to go to Besden, so he's a Russia, but it's still a hetariska.
Right, let me try to explain the broad range of opinions on the matter. Hetariska, Ramesha held that the parties have to understand the hetariska. And he writes the Lashon, if they think it's a Kameya, you waive a Hetiska alone, and it's Mutter, that's wrong.
In this case, he understood now, it very well.
He understood it well, okay. The parties have to understand. Now, if the two parties are from a Yidden, and the intention is to avoid Ribbis at all costs, so we're very makel with how much they understand. They have a loose understanding. It's okay, because we know that they're serious about it. That they sincerely mean it, and even though they don't fully understand it, when push comes to shove, they're going to look at the hetiska and deal with the hetiska. When you have a non-from person involved, it's interesting. Emigrant Savings Bank is one of the still privately held savings banks owned by Jews. A couple of years ago, I spoke in Manhattan on these issues. It's interesting that the owners. Now, the third generation, some of the grandchildren are now from, they're now Shema Shabbos, and they came over to me, if I can get a het to iska, that would pass muster with the lawyers. So I said, you know, you're coming to me after a drasha, I'm sure you went to many people. And they said they tried. The issue is the following. The lawyers, and their job is to protect the company, really don't want the heter iska to ever be carried out. The truth is, when from people do a loan, we also don't plan on enforcing the escape clause, so to speak, of the heter iska. We do plan to make the payments. But by from people, the understanding is that we mean to stick with it. What happens when one party is not from, and it's clear from the lawyers that they don't mean to stick with it? So I know, and I shouldn't speak b'shem anyone else, but I think Rav Zilberberg, who's a big expert in Hilchus Ribbis, he knows much more than I do. He has a chiddush in this inyan, which may be along the lines of what you said. Again, I'm hesitant to speak for him, but he has a chiddush in this inyan that it's okay, that a person could do it, as long as if they would go to Bezdin, the Bezdin would make the heter iska, that it's okay. My understanding of Rav Moshe's Truvis is not that way. And again, I don't speak for Rav Zilberberg. When I say it's not that way, I think Rav Moshe writes in a Truva that if the lender insists that the borrower not have a copy of the Heta Iska, that means he's not serious about it. If he insists the borrower not have a copy, that's a problem. And it sounds from Rav Moshe that he wants it to be something which clearly both sides are taking seriously. So there's a difference of opinion on the matter. Again, if you're a borrower or a lender, you want to be Yetzer Kol HaShitis, you're talking about Dairaisis. When you're arranging a loan, even though the one who arranges it is also really involved in the Loisa Simon, but if you're arranging it for people who are being Samech on their Rabbanim and being Samech on Paiskim, so, you know, maybe it's different. But there is a difference of opinion on this. It's a tough issue. And I personally would not... when shtaris are brought to me, and there's a clause, they have the whole hetiska, and the last clause says that this hetiska may not be introduced into court. So I personally don't suggest that people go with it. Again, there are those who do. I can't speak for them in which cases they do. It's a hard issue.
The entire basis of commercial lending is that a promissory note is very easily collectible. All right, maybe in the end assets aren't there, but it's something you can sue on. That a mortgage can very easily be foreclosed. That it's not a mysterious or ambiguous process. Without that certainty, there would not be the underlying basis for issuing loans to strangers who come in, no matter how well you investigate them. It wouldn't be the entire...
You're right. And based on that consideration, Rav Moshe has his tshuva, which is also a chiddush, where Rav Moshe allows Yidden doing a heter iska, or a sale lease agreement for that matter, to have a regular mortgage document so that it's in court, it's dealt with expeditiously. They know the document, they know what it is, they don't start reading into the commas and what was the intent. A mortgage document they're familiar with. So Rav Moshe writes that you can have mortgage documents as long as you only use the mortgage document to take money that you're entitled to based on the heter iska agreement. You can't take more money than you're entitled to. But to expedite the court proceedings, a person is allowed to have it precisely for that reason, because then it's dealt with in an expeditious way, in a proper way. Yes?
In the case where you're a broker and you have all these shilas that come up and you want to be silent, but let's say you have a bank, you have a shila that's fully owned by a yid and you're tearing both ways, are you afraid to get involved more than know the fund of mind about what's going on? Or you did yours but done to find what's going on and you can say?
It's a very difficult question. The question is whether the broker's achrayus, whether you can subrogate it to the client. In a case where the client doesn't care about halacha, clearly you have your obligation. The question is, with the client, he has a rav, and he's saimach on his rav. What? That's right. By ribis d'oraisa, where a loan is ribis d'oraisa, the person arranging the loan is also obligated in a Torah to avoid not only Aslof Ne'iver, but in Hilchus Ribbis itself, there's an obligation on everybody arranging the loan to withdraw if the loan is a Ribbis loan. Whether it's the lawyer, the broker, anybody involved in making the loan by Ribbis Dairaisa has an obligation. Ribbis Darabanon, I think the Chavis Das is Masupik, I'm not sure what the consensus is. But by Ribbis Dairaisa, which most of these things are, It's a uh, it there is an obligation. Now you can ask where you're arranging for a borrower who has a rav that he's samech on, and his rav is this rav who holds that in this way it can be done, and there is such a shita. His rav is Davdi Neza holds that he can be samech on the rav. So the question is, do you have more of an obligation than the lender and borrower themselves? The svara is that since the isser of the sirser is to arrange a loan by isser, and this loan has a heter, the svara would be that it's okay. On the other hand, you have your own chiyuvim. I don't know what the answer to that is. I could see tutzdad into it. But where a person doesn't care about hilchas ribbis, then there's certainly a problem. Yeah. As I mentioned before, if there's no personal guarantee, Ramosha holds there's no issur ribbis. No personal guarantee on part of the borrower, the lender, it doesn't matter. What? That's irrelevant. It only matters if the borrower is a corporation. Who the lender is not. Yes. Okay. Let me address that. Yes.
Does the arranger of the loan, by just having the party say that it's going to be al pi heteriska, does that solve this problem as the arranger of the loans?
Okay, let me address the two questions. Let me take yours first, a little shorter, and so the previous questions a little longer. When two frum yidden do a loan, and they say we're doing it al pi heteriska, technically that's enough. Now, you have to know what it means, but if you say al pi heteriska, that's technically enough, as long as they're sincere. Technically, it's enough. We don't go that route because we don't want it to become magic words that everyone says and the issa comes off. It makes it, if it's going to be prevalent, it's going to be a problem. If you're stuck, you're at a deadline for a mortgage and you have from people, and you're stuck at the last minute, you can say al pi heteriska. Now, the question that was asked earlier about how to identify banks or lending institutions as whether they're Jewish or not. There is a difference of opinion as follows. This argument goes back a long time. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was published when in the 18th century. He writes about partners. He holds that if there are any Jewish partners, you can't use them as a lending institution. The Shlomo Meshiv wrote a letter to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch asking him to change his psak in subsequent printings of the Kitzur, which he never did. Today, there are basically two nekudas. Aleph, if it's Rav Yidden, it's Aser. If it's Rav Yidden, it's a Jewish company, and it's Aser. Rav Yidden doesn't mean Rav people Yidden, means Rav dollars are Jewish dollars. If most of the dollars are Jewish dollars, then it's a problem. If it's Rav Gayim, the Gedalei Eretz Yisrael, to my understanding, hold that it's Mutter. Rav Gayim, it's Mutter. Rav Moshe held that if the Jewish partners have enough of a significant stake in the company to run it, they run it based on their say-so. There are many companies that are owned by, 30% is owned by a family, and everything else is public, and people own 0.5%, 0.25%. Ramai Shel, that 30%, if they're Jews, and they control, that makes it into a Jewish company. I know that there are issues with the banks today. Public banks, you can go online. You go to Bloomberg.com, and you get a rundown of who owns what. The private banks, it's not so easy. We end up getting a list of, people come to me with a list of the people on the board. They say, this name looks Jewish, this name doesn't look Jewish. It's a very non-halachic way of dealing with it. But, which I tell you, if they're all Italian names, you know.
They're probably Jewish. what is
sharing company? Why would money? The question is, who's lending? The lender is the company. Who's the company? Is the company a Jew or a guy? So you go bus arrive to identify them. If the front person makes the decisions because he's an employee, a trusted employee, then it's irrelevant. If he makes the decisions because he's an owner, then he's considered an owner. If he makes his decisions based on his stake in the company, it's a Jewish company. He makes his decisions because he's an employee, So that's nothing. He's an employee. It doesn't change anything.
So if he owns 10% of the bank and he's making decisions, then you have a problem?
If he owns 10%, well, if he owns 10%, everybody else owns less than 0.5%, and maybe it's probably I don't know enough. You have to ask businessmen if 10% is enough. If well, again, the Gedolei Eretz Yisrael hold Rav Goyim is enough. If you have sveikis about the Yidditz Chelik, so you have what to rely on.
Record, it's not a good price. Legally, I'm talking about American law. The owners are the stockholders, not the board of directors.
It's true. Ramesh said a chiddush that those who control are considered, could make it into a Jewish company.
If decisions are made by vote, and you have the majority that are not...
By vote of?
By vote of the board members.
Of the board members.
You could have a Jewish bail.
Again, if right of the money is Jewish money, Kuli Alma holds it's a Yid lending. Doesn't matter who the board is. If a mir of it is Jewish, if Rav is Gayish money, so then Gedolei Eretz Yisrael always holds its Gayim. Ramesh's chiddush is that if the Jew controls because of his holdings, then that's different. So the question is, why does it mean he controls? If the board votes and he doesn't control the board, then you're right.
How do you figure out over the money? Right. The shares and the money.
It's very hard to find. That's why we have Rabbi Ari Marburger here. You give him the job, not kidding. He tries as best he could to investigate. It's not easy. It's not easy to investigate.
I had to ask you between a person that's borrowing from a bank, or like the Rav said earlier, borrowing money from a father. Because some people are hesitant to go with a bank because it's had to ask them, and at the same time they go to a Gaisha bank and they're doing the same thing with the father and the son, and they have to rely on a het isk again. Is there enough gemina between?
There's enough gemina when the het isk is between two from Yidden and they're sincere. And the het isk is with a bank, which may not be sincere. In a local immigrant bank, the manager agreed to a het isk, and Yidden are using it. I doubt the local manager has any authority to agree to a het isk. You know, I don't think it would, you know, he agreed to a piece of paper, but I don't think it means anything. I don't know who's relying on it.
There are from banks that left money here.
Yeah. If the from bank is serious and they have a proper het isk, and there's no nafkamina. If they're serious about the het isk, then this. Excuse me? Back to the. Yes. If the 30% owner controls, Ramesh held that's a Jewish company. Yeah. Any company where the money is more than 50% Jewish is Jewish. That's it. That's the kuliyam. All right. I don't know what people's schedules are. I can answer questions privately afterwards. I just wanted to be mesayim. When people are involved in chinuch, everybody knows they're involved in avodas hakodesh all the time. When people are involved in business, they're also involved. There's a story published by the Chafetz Chaim's son in his Dugmois Me'avi. If I recall correctly, a sheikh told the Chafetz Chaim he doesn't want a shecht anymore, too much achrayis, he wants to go into business. So the Chafetz Chaim told him, what do you mean? Hilchas Shechita is 28 simanim. Cheshev Yishpat is over 400 simanim. It's much easier, it's safer to be a sheikh than to be in business. So it's an avodas hakodesh, and it requires, especially in your line, where the parnosa depends on the, it goes this way, it goes that way, the deal goes through, it doesn't go through. It's not an easy thing, but I hope HaKadosh Baruch Hu give siyata d'shmaya, give Klal Yisrael siyata d'shmaya, that the mortgage business should pick up again, and the real estate investment should pick up again. It should be a yeshua for all of the, really, all of them, all. The rive of the menadvim and Klal Yisrael, the big menadvim, are not able to give as much as they used to. I don't know if they're not able because they don't have the money, but the mindset is not there. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help. They should be able to be menadvei tzedakah again. And all of us who enjoy Derech Agav from the business deals should also be able to be Nehenah. I appreciate your inviting me here today.
Doesn't make the concept that the bank goes in through